Tune in for an exclusive and permanent deal just for you. Get ready to immerse yourself in nature with an ongoing offer of 20% off all Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds, exclusively designed for our valued podcast listeners. When you head over to homegrowncannabisco.com and use code COUGH20 at checkout, that's COUGH20. It's time to embrace the power of nature and embark on a growing experience like no other.
Hey there, fellow enthusiasts and curious cultivators. Welcome back to another episode of Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman. It's great to be here with you all, especially now that we're back in sunny California. But let me tell you, the adventure we just had at the International Cannabis Awards in Barcelona, Spain was nothing short of legendary. We had the incredible opportunity to soak in the vibrant culture and history at the famed consumption lounge Choco Barcelona, and what an experience it was. Now, today's episode is a real treat. I'm sitting down with the one and only Danny Danko, a fellow voyager in this vast cannabis cosmos. We go way back, sharing not just countless memories, but also our journey through the pages of High Times magazine. In this conversation, we're going to dive into some of those memories, reflecting on our individual paths with the magazine, and trust me, it's going to be a nostalgic ride. We'll also reveal our top three favorite articles, pieces that not only influenced us, but also shaped our perspectives in this ever-evolving cannabis landscape. So, get comfortable, light up if you're so inclined, and join us as we reminisce, laugh, and maybe even learn a thing or two. This is Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman, and you're in for an episode you won't want to miss. Hello, everybody, and good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you may be. We're at another wonderful episode of Grow Weed at Home at Choco Lounge in beautiful Barcelona, and I have one of my best, oldest friends here, Mr. Danny Danko. How you doing, brother?
Welcome. Yeah, it's an honor to be here. We've come a long way, haven't we?
We're still alive.
Yeah.
And we're still, dare we say, relevant?
I mean, you know, things are changing rapidly. And, you know, we've been there to see it all happen and lay some of the groundwork and foundation of that. So that's pretty
exciting. The good, the bad, the ridiculous, the blindfolds, the...
Yeah, riding in the trunk of a car.
People getting busted after you go see them, and then they're like, yeah. I had nothing to do with it, I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is sometimes you have to take people back in time and have them realize that, like, you know, we were the only game in town for a long time, and it was only because we had the balls to do it when it wasn't legal and it wasn't even, you know... allowed in any way, shape, or form. You know, that stigma obviously still remains, but we've seen a lot of changes.
Why did we do it?
I mean, for me, you know, love of the plant, dedication to this plant. I mean, we've seen so many times, you and I, you know, where people come up to us and tell us that they wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for cannabis. And that,
yeah, man.
To me, that's just, you know, that's the most profound part of this thing. It's like, we're on the right side of history. We're fighting for a healing flower that people, you know, put that stigma on and criticized and threw people in jail for and tore families apart and all these things, you know. So the injustice to me was the thing. Because, you know, I loved cannabis before getting involved in any of that, but, you know, and I profited from it, but it wasn't until realizing about the injustices, you know, things like Shattered Lives and Emperor Wears No Clothes, you know, books like that, that opened your eyes to the fact that, hey, they've been lying about this plant and they've been really tearing people's lives apart over something so silly, you know, and something that's actually a beneficial thing, right?
That's really, you know, for me, the basis was, I know I'm right. And I know you're wrong. I mean, you meaning the people who are trying to put people in jail or take it away from me or whatever. And it was, you know, I read those books too, you know, before I got a job at High Times. And that's how we met. And I you know, I was a pot dealer, you know, and then you figure out that you can grow it. And now you don't have to buy it and sell it. You can grow it and sell it. You know, it was an amazing realization. And, you know, what I'd like to say is that I think if it wasn't for me falling in with High Times, not only would we not be here, we never would have met each other, but I don't think that I would have developed the appreciation. Because when I asked you why we did it, you know, why I did it was
I had already been growing for like 8 years underground, and I already had like 25 addresses under my belt. I'd already moved 20, 25 times. I already had dark circles under my eyes. I already thought, you know, one day eventually I'm going to go to jail. And then I had an opportunity to turn this into a legitimate life for myself, you know, a job.
Right.
And I was like, there's only a couple of jobs I would take, like, you know, at that time. Like, yeah. I'm free. I can do what I want, right? I'm making okay money. And I got offered a job to be a writer after they photographed a few of my things. And very soon after I took the job, I realized that there was this, I'll call it a responsibility, you know, that went along with, you know, writing for High Times. And all of a sudden, I was an advocate. And I was a warrior.
Right.
And I took it on willingly, and it really energized me. It gave me purpose in life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's the, you know, the, I don't know exactly how to put it, but there was no industry at the time. I mean, there was just a few. That's why, you know, High Times is celebrating a 50-year anniversary this year. There's really no other brands in cannabis that can say that. Very few. And so, you know, there were very few jobs available. And not only that, but people actually read the magazine and listened, because I remember seeing your articles, you know, as a grower and a reader of High Times. And that shift from just here's how to grow to here's how to grow organically, here's how to properly cure and dry your bud, like that connoisseurship that you really brought to the table of, you know, growing with love and treating this plant with the respect that it deserves, you know, and not necessarily even for profit, just to fill up a bunch of jars and have the kindest bud. Because, you know, in the 90s, again, taking people back, most people, if they were smoking cannabis, were smoking Mexican,
whatever you could find,
anything you could find, whatever the dealer
and there
had.
Were dry times when you didn't find any.
Oh, there was droughts.
There was droughts.
And, you know, yeah, I remember the famous drought of 87 every summer, you know. But, you know, that's the reality of that time. So you know, you have to also look back with that in mind. Like, kind bud, you know, a nice seedless green bud was hard to find, you know, unless you were on Dedge Tour, you know. I mean, and then, you know, of course, the Canadians started coming in and all that. But really, everything was imports, you know, from Mexico, Colombia, Jamaica, you know,
where you had equal weight of seed and stem.
Right.
You did actually.
Exactly.
Material.
Exactly. And then to see your articles saying, grow organic, here's ways, you know, here's, you know, even, I mean, we're talking about 1994, I think, is the first, you know, and so that's 30 years ago. And in that span of 30 years, you can see how far we've come to living soil and KNF and, like, people basically just going off nutrients entirely, you know, and having, you know, regenerative agriculture in a small scale for personal, you know, use. To me, that's why I love home grow, and I love pushing people, you know, just set up a tent, a 4x4 tent in your home, and you'll never pay for weed again.
You know, and that's what's so cool about our relationship. You know, we're best buds, but we're not best buds in the sense that we've had dinner together thousands of times and spent hundreds of hours together. We're kind of bound together from High Times, but the other thing that binds us is that ultimate love and respect for the plant. But for me, I just think it was lucky that when I found out how to grow, like you said, it wasn't about the money for me. It was more, oh my God, how amazing this is that I can do this for myself. And then the happenstance that I got to share that passion with the whole world. No, but I couldn't have written that script.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I also got to say, our secret sauce, too, is we're working with people like Andre Grossman and Brian Jan, Justin, photographers that, you know, brought these articles to life.
Absolutely.
And, you know, looking at them now, we were joking earlier, like, okay, it looks a little leafy, but, you know, it's 1994.
I think this was a pull-out poster.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I remember that Cushman's Harvest poster that Andre shot.
In front of the stove.
Oh, yeah, in front of the stove.
With my ma's big Ming vase.
Listen, that is a poster I put on my wall and aspired to. People aspire. If you were a connoisseur, an aficionado of cannabis at that time, you aspired to have nice, properly dried, cured
so
spears. Yeah,
it was,
and it burned beautifully. And you know, like,
who would have thought that the weed that my dealer, one day came to me. I got an apartment with a walk-in closet. I moved and I got a new apartment. And he says, "Hey, if you let me grow in your closet, I'll teach you how to grow." And he had these purple Kush seeds, and that's what led to me becoming the Kush Man, which led to me becoming Kyle Cushman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
I could have been growing green crack.
You'd be Kyle Crackhead.
Crack man.
Kyle Crackhead. Yeah,
so, you know, it's such a wonderful thing, man. And the appreciation of that, as old as I get, whether I still remain in the public eye at all, I'll never lose my appreciation for the time of Kyle Cushman and working at High Times and traveling around the world with Andre. I got to mention Andre too. You know, Andre Grossman is still one of my closest friends. I talk to him regularly, and he got one of my pictures on the New York Times
magazine,
Sunday full color magazine, a story by Michael Pollan,
yeah,
who ended up later, some years later, coming and asking to interview me. And then giving me a thank you in his foreword of his Botany Desire book.
Right. There's a whole chapter about cannabis.
Oh, my goodness. So just the love of the plant that led to the love of our job, which led to the love of the community,
yeah,
which led to the continuing love that we have for getting on a 12-hour flight and coming and being with all these wonderful people here today.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there was also the selfish reasons, like, I think we both had, too, of, like, we want higher quality and cheap, you know, better cannabis in the world.
It was that love of the plant.
I want to spread this because the enjoyment I get from this, like going over to Amsterdam in the 90s to the Cannabis Cup, which was the only game in town, and that was the only place where you could be treated like this, where you can just smoke and relax and chill and it's tolerated and, you know, you're treated like a customer instead of a criminal. You know, that feeling that I felt in the 90s in Amsterdam and now in Spain and America, and we wanted to spread it around the world. Like, I remember feeling that, like, being there and saying, why does it have to just be this one place, Amsterdam, where we can go and feel this way? Let's bring this feeling back home of, like, you know, take the stigma away, and we're just cannabis consumers, you know? We didn't make the laws, you know, but, like... and then it was proof that, like, we're not the enemy either. We're not going to destroy anything, you know, like, we're okay.
Yeah.
And that now to see 30 years later that has happened. I mean, it's still happening, and, you know, we've got a long way to go, but there's social clubs in Barcelona and all over Spain and other parts of Europe. The coffee shops are still there in Amsterdam. And now we've got places, social consumption lounges back home, home grow laws. Of course, too many hoops to jump through and too much taxes and regulation, but it's better than going to jail. You know, and
yeah,
the injustices that aren't happening now that were happening then is full on justification for everything. You know, like I said, it's the right side of history, but the future that would have happened without the information being spread by people who were brave enough to spread it at the time, you know, that I'm very proud of that. Us as colleagues, you know, including everybody.
And that's what's so interesting is that the people that we work with at High Times, we don't all keep in touch all the time, but I talk to Natasha occasionally.
We're family. We're family because, you know, all families go through trauma too, you know?
Right.
And you're bonded by traumas and, you know, large and small. And
it may have seemed like a great time. Like, we were having a lot of fun most of the time, but there was always the threat. We didn't know they were going to come and bust the magazine, if they were listening to us on the phone, all these things. It was
people tell me, too, you know, like, yeah, it must be nice to have a job where all you do is smoke weed. I'm like, Every month a magazine has to come out. You know what I mean?
Deadline.
And on top of that, you know, there's books to write. There's events to put on. There's, you know, calendars.
I had my very first panic attack that I got introduced to panic attacks just short of a deadline for a magazine. I don't remember where exactly it was, but I remember leaving the office, not shutting down my computer, not telling anybody I was even leaving, and just going home.
Right.
So there's a little bit of background about how we got here.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing is I almost feel like we could just do a talk show about that. We could literally talk for a good 10, 12, we could just
hours.
Episode after episode.
Hours.
Leading to when we met Dennis Perrone, when we met Jack Herer, to leading to when we...
All of it.
You know, the first event in California that we didn't know if it was going to get busted. So the first event...
A few events did get busted.
You know?
Even in Amsterdam.
It just goes on and on and on.
But when it was only in Amsterdam and it was just the Cannabis Cup, we were the only... people like now you know there's all so many different
competitions
events
awards
and many of them are really going back to the same model where you land and you get a big package with 20 30 sometimes 40
right
samples
right.
And you got to get through them in 5 days or so right. 6 days maybe sometimes 3 days.
Right.
You know, you're hoping for a few more days. But you're also working. You hit the ground running. You're working morning, noon, and night, getting very little sleep. I mean, it's a marathon.
Yep.
And going through those experiences together is a bonding thing.
For sure.
And, you know, like you have an article in there you wanted to talk about how many strains and how many hours. It's like...
Yeah, you know,
that's that experience that we had, you know, that's the bonding and brotherhood. But
42 strains in 96 hours. So the 96 hours represents the 3.5 days because you're there for a week, but there's a day and a half of travel to get there. There's a day and a half travel to go home. And the reason why it was 42 strains was because they accidentally made me a flower judge and a weed judge at the same time. So I had two judging kits. And you know what? I'll tell you, I got it done. Because when I was done, there was a consensus. You know, like the winners that I put in were the top 3 or 4 or 5 were the same as the ones who only had to do half as many as I did.
Right.
And so it was. So the theme of today's show, I'm going to go back to the beginning, was a while back I asked Danny to pick out a few of his favorite stories, and I was going to do the same. That we wrote. And I went back to, is this 92 or 94?
I think that's 94, and then the one after was 95.
Okay, so this is 1994, getting started with organics. This was the first story that I ever wrote. And they did a centerfold of these flowers that in today, by today's standard, they wouldn't even call it mids. I think they just call it LARF.
LARF.
But you know what? This was Purple Kush.
Yeah.
And it wasn't from Amsterdam yet. This was local. This was United States Purple Kush. I think it came
from Vermont
or something where it was bred. Mm-hmm. And boy, was it good smoke.
In 1994, if you could get your hands on that, you were.
Spears of Sensimilia.
Yeah.
Wasn't very dense. But, and yeah, so it says, the first caption here, it says, this mound of nearly 3 pounds of Purple Kush was harvested only 90 days after germination. Amazing. That's what we all do every time. And, you know, so it's got, it talks about lights, and then part two is soil and fertilizer. And then there's a picture here. This is a pretty good picture. Look at those. So do you notice what I'm growing in? You know what those are? Those are dollar store buckets that, like, if you were having a car wash and you need, like, 100 buckets,
yeah.
You'd go and you'd get these things, right? And so that's what I did. I used to go to dollar stores, and I used to save 2 and 3 liter soda bottles. I used to love the clear one because you'd start them in there and you could see the root progression.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew in these with no holes in the bottom because look at the floor. It's a rented apartment with a wooden floor. And... I might be out of there in 60 or 75 days. Like I said, I moved every 2 to 3 months. And so I learned how to grow in pots with no holes in it. And this is my cat, Muggsy. This was my first caption I ever wrote. It says, "My cat about to munch on some kush." The way that came about was there was a fan blocking the door, and Andre was done with the photo shoot. And Muggsy had been sitting at the door patiently to watch the whole time. And he said, "What would have happened if you took the fan away? Would the cat go in?" I said, "Oh, yeah, he eats leaves every day. He'll go right in." And so I opened the door, let him go in there, and Muggsy started munching on some leaves. And, yeah, man, that was...
a happy accident.
That was crazy. And that led to organic flowering and harvesting, which was part one, when to flower. Part two, is it male or female? Part three, a new soil mix. Part four, transplanting. Part five, watering and feeding. And, you know, like you, I look back and it seems so rudimentary. Like, you could find this information 100 times over now on the internet.
Right.
But back then, there was nobody saying, look, if you got a little room and you got a little light and you got some pots and you got some soil and you wanted to do it organically, you could go out and buy yourself some back guano and bubble it up in a bucket, and you didn't have to buy Miracle-Gro.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. That information was, I mean, clandestine farming like this, I mean, it was like people hid these magazines like pornography. I hear that time and time again from people that they like either discovered their dad's stash of High Times, or they had to hide theirs from their parents, or however it might go. But it was like, you know, just the magazine was dangerous. You know what I mean?
It was like, almost like Playboy and Hustler.
We thought we would be raided at any time.
Right.
You know, we were protected by the First Amendment, basically, we thought, you know, and we had some lawyers, obviously. But that's it. And, you know, you just knew that, like, if anything happened out there in the wild, you know, you would just hope that, you know, someone was out there thinking about you. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of back then, is that this information, there was no internet, and there was, you know, Ed and Jorge and, you know, a few books here and there, a few other writers, of course, that were doing this, but they were doing it independently and very clandestinely and very much DIY, you know, self-printing and all of that. So, you know, it took some bravery, you know, and looking back, I feel like, wow, you know, we did that. At the time, it just felt like the right thing to do and fun, you know. Can't forget how much fun we had.
You know, I got...
But again, a magazine has to come out, and people think the judging thing, okay, 42 strains in 96 hours, awesome. Hey, that's a lot of work, you know what I mean, while you're working already. So it's like, you know...
And there was no doubt it was taken seriously.
You have to take it seriously because there's careers at stake.
Right.
You know, people are making or breaking companies and
families.
And a lot, some the seed companies who won competitions in those days were able to use that to their advantage and expand and build. And here we are. I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of companies out there now and breeders and you know. It worked. It worked. That organic article worked on me, and I hope some of mine worked on others. And I feel like they did. And you know, and now, you know, we can look back and it's like, oh, at the time, you know, you're just grinding away. You're trying to meet deadlines and not stress out over all the, you know, responsibilities. But you know, looking back, you can see like there's a legacy, and like, you know, we're all part of it, and it's something to be proud of. You know, I feel very proud when someone comes up to me and tells me, you know, that it was important to them, you know, an article I wrote or something that, you know, they heard me say about cannabis, because it's life-saving. It's like, you know, and it's...
life-changing. It is certainly
life-changing. I've seen it be life-saving. Certainly seen it be... it changed all our lives almost in every way for the better. I mean, the only bad part was prohibition. You know, if you took that part out of it, you know, it's a miracle.
You know, I before we get on to your, I gotta mention, you know, earlier in the episode here, I mentioned how I never thought I would have a job, and I was probably going to end up in jail at some point in my life. Well, shortly after I wrote this first article, or this second article, this is before I'm a staff journalist, you understand.
You were freelancing, basically.
I was freelancing. Yeah. I was still growing up in the mountains. And Andre would drive his 1972 Dodge Aspen woody-sided station wagon full of his equipment up into the mountains, one time in the snow, to meet me. But I'll tell you, I got arrested. High Times got me out. And so my girlfriend calls High Times, and Michael Kennedy got involved and put Simone Montesabian on the task. They called up to Hunter, New York, where I was being held, and she said, don't make me come up there, you know, because she didn't even have to leave the city. And before you knew it, I was out on an illegal search and seizure. They caught me with what the newspaper quoted was, in excess of 50 pounds of marijuana worth $2.5 million. That was the pot, the soil, root ball, the plant, wet. That's what it said in the Hunter Town Jewett, the Jewett newspaper. I lived in a town called Jewett, New York. Okay? And I'm in jail, Danny, thinking I'm about to spend 7 to 10 years in jail. And if I didn't have a relationship with High Times Magazine, or if they didn't seem it important,
man,
to use their influence. You know, Michael Kennedy, before he passed, became a close friend of mine, and Eleanor. There was always, sometimes there was a lot of, you know, friction between the people at the owners and these people, and they were considered a trouble. It was hard to work with. For me, they saved my life.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, the cultivation department, I feel like, you know, we kind of had some autonomy as far as that goes. You know, it's like, you know,
we were editorial, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah, whatever you're out there doing, you know, we don't want to know about it unless we need to know about it, you know. Because like I said, you know, I've ridden in the trunk of a car to visit gardens and been blindfolded and happily, because if you feel that way, you know, then I don't want to know where I'm going, and I don't want, you know, I want everything to go smoothly. I learned to even take photographs because some growers wouldn't let me bring a photographer. They didn't,
right?
You know, so I had to take the pictures myself. That's my first feature, was Jungle in the Bronx, first big feature, and I had to go up there on my own. The people did not want a photographer and a writer up there, and you know, basically they were doing me a favor to even let me in there, because I had done them some favors, and
that you had to learn,
right,
how to integrate it into your job.
Well,
doesn't get along with very many jobs,
right? Oh yeah, no, I mean, driving around Humboldt County in a rental car during harvest season, it's not, you know, you better know some people, and like you better have, you know, a destination, and not just be wandering around on some logging roads and stuff, right? Because you know, it's real up there, and it was no joke. And there was certainly, as you know, people who just didn't want a High Times journalist anywhere near their gardens at all.
Very well.
Too. So, you know, it's hard. It was hard to find people that, you know, were willing to even allow it. You know,
do you know, when I first moved to California, I gave up my job, and I passed the torch to you as cultivation editor. You know,
right.
I was only the cultivation reporter back in the day. I didn't even qualify as an editor.
I started, you know, as a reporter.
You know, I rented my first place up there and only lived there for one crop cycle. And then the landlord came and told me, hey, Kyle, I can't let you live here anymore. I'm like, why? Am I not a good tenant? He says, I was at a party and I heard some people talking, and they said, you know, there's a High Times journalist living in town. We should go and kill him. We should go and teach him. He says, so I can't be responsible for that. I had to move. And, you know,
right.
like I was going to let the secret out somehow.
Right. Not everybody wants journalists, you know, especially at those times, because, I mean, you think about the consequences. They're well, you know, we had to tread lightly and be wise about how we went about it. But also to get the information out there and spread the word, because, you know, the idea was to overgrow the government.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, we did it. It's happened.
I look back. I don't think, you know, I never thought of myself as brave or courageous. But looking back, you know, we were pretty brave and courageous. But where it's like anything else, it's like you don't set out to be a hero, or it's just because we knew we were right. That's where
it's a mission. It's a mission, you know. And you, when you take on a mission like that, you're committed to it, whatever, wherever it takes you. And we got lucky enough that it, you know. But I mean,
I remember
people pay the price, and everybody pays a certain price, right? But it's, I mean, if you look around in what's happened in the last 30 years, and we presided over,
it's a lot of social change,
you know, and the stigma is, you know, going away. But you can see, I mean, clubs getting raided still, all this craziness going on, you know, the stigma remains. There are places in this world where you can still be executed for cannabis, you know, countries where there's zero tolerance. And that's, it's a shame. And so there's still a long way to go. And even in the US, you know, that's why I'm so harping on home grow and trying to get people on that, because they're complaining now that it's legal because, oh, all I can find is boof at the dispensary. Well, you know, it's grown in bulk, and, you know, they're charging you prohibition era based prices, but those prices are all in the risk. And they're, you know, they have these 100,000 square foot warehouses with HVACs and taxes and regulate, but you can do this at home in many states legally and never pay for weed again in a 4x4 square foot area and fill up jars of homegrown. You know exactly what went into it. You know whether there was pesticides or anything. And, you know, of course, I always harp on overfeeding too. I feel like everybody's overfeeding their weed. 99% of the weed I smoke is overfed. And so you can lightly feed. You're in charge of everything. And it's fun. It's like an enjoyable, fun thing. And then you don't complain about, you know, like all the mids or these candy strains or whatever it is that people are out there constantly whining and complaining about. You're in control of it, you know. And so that's, you know, that's my answer to the people who long for the good old days, like when we were outlaws.
When you had to search for a bag.
Right. And look over your shoulder. And especially if you were a grower like you and I were, it's like, we have post-traumatic stress from all of that, obviously being arrested, but also just lying to people all the time. You know, you can't even go out and Yeah, exactly. The first question in New York City is, what do you do? You're lying right off the bat. So everyone you meet, you know, you're already, you know, being deceptive and, you know, because you're hiding because of the risk. But without the risk, if it's legal in New York now, you know, in June to grow 6 plants per person,
but
12 per household,
nourishing.
It's legal. That's it. Anyone over 21, no medical card necessary. Then you're out of the cannabis industry. Everyone's asking me, how do I get into the cannabis industry? I'm like, I'm getting you out of the cannabis industry. Okay. There's a lot of, you know, chaos in the cannabis industry. And, you know, the people, for everyone that's doing great and making money, there's a bunch of people that are struggling and losing money. So, but if you grow your own, you're out of the loop. You know, you've taken yourself out of the system, and you have your jars of homegrown pennies to the dollar. And if it's legal, there's no risk and no fear involved. And so why not? You know, like, that's what I want to see. Farmers markets where home growers get together, trade jar for jars. You know, you grew that, I grew this. Let's, you know, an ounce here, an ounce. And that's the future I envision, you know.
Absolutely.
Beyond just the Apple store. Of course, I mean, I'm happy that there's dispensaries and vape pens and gummies and all that. But for us, like true flower connoisseurs and, you know, for the hash people, the rosin guys and all that, we need our safe spaces too. You know what I mean? And that's why, you know, these consumption lounges, I'm hoping, you know, we need to have all of that, what they have, without the fear of being raided and all of these things where, you know, I don't know. It's just, like I said, we've come a long way, but we still have so far to go to really, truly free the plant and free the prisoners, by the way, that are still locked up for this, nonviolent cannabis prisoners who are still serving time in states where it's legal.
In jail across the street from a business that's making millions of dollars.
It's unbelievable. I thought, you know, in my vision of legalization, was the first thing is release anybody from jail that has any kind of cannabis offense, you know, and with no other, you know, obviously violent, you know, things going on, but like a nonviolent cannabis offender immediately released from prison. Like, that should be step one before anybody makes a dollar.
Right.
Yeah.
As the deeper that the love goes for our culture, that also extends into the industry, you know? Unfortunately, it is like any other industry in the world in that, you know, there is some companies and businesses that actually care about you and care about the product and care about the fight and care about as we do. But there are a lot of businesses that are only there to make money and there's sure. nothing about the bottom. So what I'm getting at is that's the biggest reason of all to grow your own.
Right.
Because don't make yourself be dependent on going to a store for so many reasons, you know,
right.
least in which being you don't get to choose what you smoke.
Right.
They may have you the strain that you like one week and then you've really found the one that rings your bell and then all of a sudden it's not there anymore. You can grow that yourself.
Right.
And it's no coincidence that you and I were still in the same fight. Danny's podcast is called Grow Bud Yourself.
Right.
Mine is called Grow Weed at Home.
Right.
And, you know, that's no coincidence.
Prior to Grow Bud Yourself, when I was at High Times, it was called Free Weed from Danny Danko, right. not with Danny Danko.
Good.
Free Weed from Danny Danko. I'm giving you free weed for life. Now, there's a catch, right?
You have to work.
You're going to have to do work. A little bit of work, but it's fun. And, you know, if for the people out there who are never going to plant a seed and grow it, mm-hmm. but are connoisseurs and love it, vote with your pocketbook. Spend the money on the weed you want to see more of. You know what I mean? And then you will. Because ultimately, we live in a capitalist world and let the marketplace decide. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But what that means is if you want a vape pen or gummies or whatever, that's what you want and there should be a market for that. But if you want, you know, AAA quality, properly dried and cured cannabis, flowers or, you know, fresh, you know, hash and rosin and all of that, spend the money on the quality product from the good people who are doing it right, you know, growing it right, processing it correctly, and you'll see more of it. But spend money on the stuff you're not into and you'll see more of that. So
you know what you make me think of? Really,
I'm not letting the consumers off the hook. You know what I mean? Like you have a responsibility too.
I have a piece of advice for consumers too, you know. You know, if you have occasion, okay, to put the word out through your network of friends and family, and you may be able to come across a personal grower, I suggest that you ask a favor. You know, like, there are people who know me that could ask and get a little bit of my personal flower. And the reason I'm saying that is because you may think that the flower that you're buying or the gummies that you're buying or the vape that you're smoking is sufficient or is excellent or is good. But if you can get a hold of some product that was produced by somebody who truly loved what they were doing and they were not concerned with the rent and the tax and the salaries and the insurance and they did what we did in all these magazines, I think you'll find out that there's another level. You know, like there's McDonald's and then there's a hamburger, you know, and we've all eaten McDonald's and we still every once in a while probably will, but we're not smacking our lips looking forward to it. So, you know, search out that personal grower still, I think might be an interesting experience.
Yeah. And, you know, everywhere where I've found, you know, there's coffee shops, there's social clubs, there's dispensaries. There's going to be a wide variety of quality, you know, and all of that. So seek out the ones with the highest quality. They're there. There's good weed at dispensaries. You just have to find the right ones. There's good weed in Amsterdam. There's good weed in Spain, and good weed in New York City. But you have to seek it out, you know. So and that's your responsibility there. But, you know, it's grown with love, ultimately. And that's kind
passion.
Of what... Passion. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there was a certain passion to it when it was clandestine that is missing now a little bit because, you know, you can just blow out a warehouse full, you know, 100,000 square feet.
And you can lock it up at night, go away, turn the office lights on, and forget about it. You go home to your home, and you do your thing. But when you were living the life, there was no place to go.
Most of the growers I know who scaled way, way up are miserable. Like, they don't enjoy it. They lost that. Like,
I don't look forward to commercial spaces.
No, I
desired it for a long time, and I did it a few times, and they didn't work out.
Well, you know, it's scaling up. Quality suffers. That's basically what happens, no matter what. So that's again why I say the people that are winning the contests are winning in tents and small, you know, not necessarily tents, but not huge grows.
Just personal spaces.
Personal spaces, but you can produce a lot in a personal space. And another thing I harp on, is like, okay, a limit of 6 plants, it sounds like nothing. But the limit isn't on the size of the plants, it's on the number of plants. So veg them out a little longer, give them room to breathe, more root, more fruit, let them grow out. And
one of your first articles, more fruit. Right?
Yeah, and that's a phrase that I didn't invent. Of course, I think Chris Bliss or somebody, I heard it first. But it goes back.
I gave you a title of your articles once. I gave you "Cloning for Dollars."
Cloning for Dollars. Yeah.
It was an old TV show on like Channel 11.
Yeah, it was like a game
bowling
show.
Bowling for Dollars.
Yeah, yeah. And so that one, Jungle in the Bronx, I really enjoyed. That was like my first big feature. I had to bring my own camera. Luckily, they had halide lighting because they had high pressure sodiums. I didn't know from light balancing and all of these things. So I would have not been able. I wouldn't have come back.
Orange, yellow.
The images would have been unusable.
Frank never would have printed it.
No. And I learned very fast that the thing we had then was the quality of the photography, and you had to step up if you wanted
it. You mean Frank's still there?
It's amazing. It's great. I mean,
how is it? Is that 40 years?
He's one of the unsung heroes,
how
too.
How many fucking decades has he been there?
Yeah, a long, long, long time. And I remember this one because this is an article I did compiling a bunch of different articles together called it was for the 45th anniversary or something, or maybe the 40th anniversary because this is the 50th now. Mm-hmm. The greatest pot gardens of all time. And it opens with Andre's spread of
the Field of Dreams. Was that the Field
of Dreams?
Dreams.
Yes. And look, Chris in the middle.
Wow.
We definitely need to mention our cultivation editor, Chris Simonek, who was very behind the scenes but pivotal in getting these images and articles out there.
This allowed
coaxing them out of you, very much a mentor from the writing angle too, of like, bring these people into this garden. And this article, like the original one that Chris wrote with Andre's photography, Field of Dreams, was a mind blower for me because it was like in the middle of a cornfield, and it was like a massive
Kentucky or something, wasn't it?
I don't know exactly the state,
but it was somewhere in Midwest.
I know Chris said it. Yeah, it was like in the Midwest to the south, but a big, huge garden in the 90s.
Middle of a cornfield or something.
Yeah, in the middle of a cornfield.
It was a center field of just. It was 1,000 plants, it looked like.
Yeah. And I mean, Chris is in the garden. This wasn't a photo that was published in the magazine because Chris is holding a shotgun in the field.
A book about this shortly after I came called Paradise Burning. Chris Simonek wrote a book about the journey of a High Times.
Right. Great book, actually. And, very, very great.
Yeah, he was a great guy because he allowed me to come in every day, get as stoned as I wanted. As long as I came up with an idea for a story, it didn't matter if I wrote it up like shit, because his job was to make it look good, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an unsung hero for me, for sure.
As an editor, for sure, and like for
inspiration. We got all the glory, didn't we?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say for me, also, and for you, Steve Bloom, probably very influential.
I still talk
and
to Steve all
for
the time.
And for me, David Bienenstock, really, because I would give him my articles after I had written them, and he would turn them around and change things around.
And you were like, wow.
Man, make them better. And also, I'm learning as that's happening. So, even after people move on or whatever, that information.
I always say High Times was my finishing school.
Yeah, exactly. So I got a few others. Field of Dreams was the I just had to open it with that spread because
that picture, that was from one of my stories.
It is. That story is in here. It's a picture.
That was
our dearly departed Eddie Lepp's Healing Fields.
The Healing Fields, yes.
Yeah. So that's in here. Million Dollar Grow Room. I love that one. Trichome Tech. We got to definitely mention them. But yeah, there was like,
this is when the photography and the flowers really sort of were impressive. It wasn't like these larfy little things that I had in my stories.
Right. Eddie Lepp's Healing Fields. And that was actually MG Imaging, it says here, that did the photos on that.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Jorge's Colombian Green article, Jungle in the Bronx, of course. And, you know, every one of these, for me, you know, as a High Times reader before being a reporter and
as I was,
like, you know, it changed the course of where you were going with what you were doing. Like, you know, you'd see new possibilities, you know, and there new things to attain, new strains to ascribe to. I know you were one of the people like myself who got to choose like the top 10 strains of the year or the strain of the year, I think, until,
right.
You know, and I started the Seed Bank Hall of Fame in that same vein. It's like, how can we, like, you know, teach people about all the different varieties that are available? I mean, I still get people asking me, like, how can you tell the difference between different types? It's like, there are, you know, so many multitudes within this one plant of different, you know, flavors and effects.
It was also
the
opportunity to bring recognition to people like myself. I knew what it felt like to be in the shadows for 10 or more years and to get recognition from your friends, but then to have the opportunity to get recognition in a national and an international magazine for something you did, it felt really good to give that opportunity to people.
Yeah, no, and life, like I said, life-changing. So I remember, I've handed people their first cannabis cups on stage and announced
that. You handed me?
Mom. Yeah, right? I did do that as well. Yeah, that's amazing. But, you know, you can feel the energy. You can feel that their life is changing in that moment. You know, it's a huge, you know, honor to be a part of it. I just,
20 years after I wrote at High Times, like, a lot of people are very jaded about this. And, you know, they think it was an easy thing for me to win a cannabis cup with Strawberry Cough. But, you know, I entered the cup 2, 3, 4 times with my Strawberry Cough before I won.
Right.
And I always say to people, you know, if they were really just going to give it to me, don't you think they would have given it to me the first time? And so you remember that time when I was standing in the audience and you were getting ready to read that and you made eye contact with me as you were about to read it. And I'll tell you, the chill that came up my spine before you read it, because I knew it was coming, you know.
Wow.
So I had already bestowed that feeling on many people years before that. And then I got to be part of And another full cycle, you know, reading the magazine before becoming a part of the magazine, becoming a part of the magazine and helping give a light to other people and other businesses for many years. And then back out into the audience, growing my own weed, the Buds and Roses, you know, in a commercial, legal sense, and then being honored by the people. I mean, that was a big deal for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's amazing now, like, you know, looking back and to know that, like, what, you know, the industry is now was in its infancy then. And so people that you knew and are friends with and colleagues with have played a role in that and shaped where we're at. You know, it's mind blowing, really. It's an honor to have played any kind of role or be a part of it. And especially when people tell you, like, yeah, I read this or I read that, and I'm like, oh man, you know, it's an honor always, you know what I mean? And
I remember your face. I can remember your face, like, when you the Fifth Avenue Pop Parade, when you made your iPod New York T-shirt.
Oh yeah, well that's.
And I remember. 90. Can I have one, Denny? Can I have one? and it's part of my collection. You know?
Oh wow,
you
nice.
Know, it's
oh,
like.
That's awesome.
And I'll tell you, man. Just,
yeah, I mean, there was
just so much fun. Just,
there was
this episode for me is so much fun, and yeah, we're gonna do this again in this same vein.
Anytime,
because I think rehashing the history, you know, and I don't know if we could do this via Skype.
Let's do it in person.
I think that sitting here in a historic feeling place, you know, Choco. is one of the oldest lounges here in Barcelona.
Amazing.
You know, Cedric, the man that owns this place, you know, he is a true, I'm not gonna fawn here, but he is a really awesome character.
Yeah.
And he's always telling me about how he cooks dinner for his dad and he's how much he loves food. And I love you, Kyle, because you love food so much. But just, you know, the historicness of the city alone and how far they've come and being able to sit here, it makes me really want to think that we have to do another episode.
Anytime.
About the history and the full circle for both of us and how it's, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's awesome to be a part of. I just, you know, I look back and I'm like, wow, man, like, aside from, you know, family and friends, cannabis is that important to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's in my top three, you know, and then, you know, just to know that, like, you know, we all played this part in uplifting this plant, you know what I mean? Taking it out of whatever stigma and however people wanted to look at it, and now saying, no, this is worthy of not just respect and tolerance, but actual like admiration and study and, you know, have a contest, put it on a pedestal. So being part of High Times and Cannabis Cup was great, but it's even greater to see hundreds of magazines and hundreds of competitions all sort of going in all different directions into the rosin world.
Hi, man.
So, you know, that's the seed that was planted, but the plants that have grown from that seed are really, you know, the ultimate harvest. You know, that's the result of all that. And, you know, those seeds were planted with blood, sweat, and tears, right? So never let that be forgotten.
Lives were lost.
There's people growing up now that are born into legal cannabis. They don't remember.
They order it from their cell phone.
They don't. Yeah, they get it delivered, and there's people who went straight to dabs and never even smoked flower, right? So, but just never let it be forgotten that, you know, it wasn't always this way. And it took the effort of many, many freedom fighters to change it. And yes, it isn't perfect. And it certainly wasn't perfect back then. And it isn't perfect now. But we seek perfection. We seek to attain that. Just like we seek, you know, terps and everything else. We you know, it's unattainable. But the journey towards it is the uplifting part. And that's, you know, and that continues and it's grown and we have done it, but you know, it's up to them to keep that fight going long after we're gone, because you know, it's a healing flower. All right, I'm sick of this, you know, drug, a narcotic, this is a flower that grows from the earth that helps many, many, many people live a better life, put away hard drugs and alcohol and sugar and caffeine and all these far more harmful substances and replace them with this healing flower. At the end of the day, that's where we're at. And so, you know, let's just keep taking away the stigma. We don't want to be raided. We don't want to be, you know, thrown in jail. We don't want to be separated from our families. We just want to consume this healing flower. And you know what? If you try it, it might help you too. Maybe it's not for everyone, but it certainly doesn't deserve the reputation that it has had and still has. So it's up to all of us to change that. So be responsible, spread the word, grow your own. If not, you know, buy the herb you want to see more of, buy the hash you want to see more of. That's it. Responsible cannabis use.
Dude.
You know, and love for the plant. And there you have it, you know.
This man just said everything that I feel in the last few minutes. And you know, the profundity, the profoundness of this movement, it may seem like it's diminished, but I don't think it is. And the points that you just made You know, back in the day, you know, we used to say things like, help normalize, or, you know, don't be afraid to tell your grandma that you smoke weed.
Or I'm a patient, not a criminal.
You know, and, you know, some of these...
We're selling ourselves a little short.
Some of these phrases seem a little arcane now.
Right. Well, we're peaceful warriors, but we're still warriors. Like, we keep the warrior part, too. You know what I mean? Like fight for your right to consume cannabis, to consume cannabis, to grow it, to socially use it. You know what I mean? We need this back home. More consumption lounges and places to go. You know, LA has a few, New York has a few, you know, spread around, but we need them everywhere.
Well, this is what I'm getting at, is that, you know, it may not feel like a war anymore, and maybe it's not a war, but it's still just as profound that the plant is still maligned.
It's a war.
And people are still going to jail.
There's prisoners now.
And there are places you could walk down the street. Maybe you could fly in an airplane from one state to another. But if you accidentally go to the wrong state and forget that you have some weed in your bag that you packed from the last one,
oh, yeah.
You find yourself in a goddamn prison like Nikita's wife, who I think just got out today.
Oh, excellent.
I heard some good news last night. Let's pray Betty is out of jail then.
Yeah, you know,
if you don't think that it can still be as profound for you today to feel like you helped make things better, you can't. And however, I'm too old to describe the methods and the means nowadays, okay? So I'm not going to describe, but I do want to impress that there is still something that you can do to make things better.
Right.
And to be somewhat involved in that, to appreciate the fact that you can press a button on your phone and have weed delivered to your living room, and not worry about your landlord calling the police on you and ending your day, your life, your year. So, you know, it's still important but to speak out and
be responsible, too. You know, be a responsible cannabis consumer. And, you know, you don't want to throw bags on the ground and roaches on the ground. And, you know what I mean? Like, I see the packaging everywhere now in New York, all over the streets. You know, be responsible. You know, we have a responsibility to represent ourselves out there in the world.
You want the movement to move forward. You want others to be able to do what you are so happy to be, the privilege that you had.
Right.
So if you're throwing your trash all over the place and the dwellers in that city are looking, look, they're a bunch of losers, they're a bunch of trash throwers, then, you know, it's going to be harder to move the movement forward.
Yep. Agreed.
We've said it all. And you know what, with that, I have no idea how long we've been talking, but the guys behind the scenes seem like they're ready to move on to something else. I want to thank everybody for tuning in again to Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman. And please check out Grow Bud Yourself with Danny Danko. And spark one up for us. And much love from Barcelona. Well, everybody, that's another great episode with my best friend and one of your great emissaries of cannabis, Danny Danko. Man, what a great experience we had both together and separate in Barcelona. The ICAs, the International Cannabis Awards, is something that I'm sure we're all going to get more familiar with in the future. I can't wait until they bring it back to the States in New York and in LA. Choco Barcelona has got to be one of the greatest lounges that I've experienced in the world. And I can't wait to go back. So tune in next time for another great episode of Grow Weed at Home. Gua!
Are you ready to take your cannabis cultivation game to the next level? Well, hold on to your buds because we have an amazing offer just for you. Are you familiar with Strawberry Cough? This legendary strain has delighted cannabis enthusiasts worldwide with its mouthwatering flavor and uplifting effects. Lineage? Sure, let's dive into it. Strawberry Cough is a delicious cross between Strawberry Fields and Haze. Its distinct strawberry aroma and sweet taste make it a favorite among connoisseurs. Now, here's the exciting news. We're offering a fantastic deal on Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds. You'll receive 20% off your purchase on any pack size of these seeds when you use code COUGH20. That's COUGH20. That's COUGH20 at homegrowncannabisco.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to grow your own Strawberry Cough. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or a newbie looking to explore the world of marijuana horticulture, these feminized seeds will set you on the path to aromatic success. Visit homegrowncannabisco.com today and select from their wide range of premium cannabis seeds and maybe take advantage of 20% off your Strawberry Cough seeds when using code COUGH20. Happy growing, folks. Get ready to savor the tantalizing flavors and uplifting effects of Strawberry Cough, a strain that deserves a spot in every cannabis enthusiast's garden. Check out homegrowncannabisco.com now and seize this offer before it's gone.